Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Casual Conversation with Nick and Dennis. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. About you, Nick?
I can't complain. It's Friday. The sun is shining now. It was raining earlier.
Same here, but no sun to finish out the day, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's it's, you know, it wasn't, there was no sun. So I think it was, I posted a Instagram story this morning at like 7:30 and it was pretty sunny, not too many clouds. Mm-hmm. Pretty nice, but yeah, it got, the weather progressively got worse, which is weird, but yeah.
Funny how it works out sometimes. It was 30. It was in the 30s here today.
No, really?
Oh yeah.
No, thank you. I don't really miss that at all.
No. No, I think.
I'm thankful for going through it, the experience, the adversity. But I'm over it. So yeah. But anyhow, I'll get right into it. So I was on Reddit, of course, today. I came across this little motivational quote and put it on my Instagram story again. Shout out to Instagram. Just gonna sell out. I'm just trying to sell out every episode. But I was on Reddit on the Get Motivated, came up on my feed, and Dennis replied to my Instagram story and said, "Hey, maybe you should read this." So I'll read this little quote that I found. And apologies for the poor reading aloud. So here we go. It's by George St. Pierre in The Way of the Fight. You don't get better on the days when you feel like going. You get better on the days when you don't want to go, but you go anyway. If you can overcome the negative energy coming from your tired body or unmotivated mind, you will grow and become better. It won't be the best workout you have. You won't accomplish as much as what you usually do when you actually feel good, but that doesn't matter. Growth is a long-term game, and the crappy days are more important. So, start that off for your weekend early next week.
That was me tonight working out.
Yeah.
Long day at the office. It was, and the last thing I wanted to do is really go and work out.
Go to the gym. But,
yeah, same time I was like, gosh, I know I have to.
Right.
So you just go and do it. Get it over with.
Exactly. And that's honestly my mentality. Every time I go to the gym, I was a little bummed today. I forgot my workout stuff. And I guess that was a pretty bad excuse. I could go back later, but I'm not going to.
What kind of workout stuff do you use? Like your supplements or?
Oh no. Like so my gym is like a block from my work.
Sure.
So,
oh, I see.
I forgot clothes is what I forgot. So
not going to be the guy in the gym wearing jeans or dress pants. Working
yeah,
out.
No. And it's like, it's not that it's a big deal. At the end of the day, it's an excuse, but like I forgot my clothes. So it's like a 10-minute walk to my car. So by the time I get to my car, get home another 10 minutes. So right there's 20. And then by the time I get home, pack my stuff, get in the car, probably another 10. And then another 10 downtown, another walk. It's like an extra hour. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's an excuse at the end of the day, but whatever.
No, I hear you. I hear you. That's why when we come home, like I tried to do it where we were going to come, go right from work. I pick Corey up and then we go right to the gym.
Exactly. Cause you have no excuses.
Right. I know there's always a chance when you come home that yep. one of us is like, I kind of wanted to stay here now.
Yep. Or like, oh, maybe we could cook a better dinner.
Right.
So exactly what you said, it comes down to the days you don't want to go. And, most days I don't want to go, but like I said, and I try to kind of do like what you do and there's no use, you know, I'm on my way home. Right. Like I'm either going to the gym or I'm not. And if I'm not, what is my excuse? Like, I just don't want to go.
Yeah.
So I try to at least eliminate that. But
especially now that we're big working guys, it's there's nothing else to do when you get home.
Yeah, nothing too crazy. It's like,
right. There's stuff to do, but I mean,
you have enough time to work out, really.
Yeah.
Even if it's for, you know, I normally only go when I'm by myself 40, 45 minutes. So it's like, you can do that. As in you, as in me. Like, I can do that.
Well, it's all about what you're doing in there, not about how much time you're spending in there.
Exactly. And probably doing a little bit of both, but I'm at least going, kind of like, you know, I'm at least going. Sometimes, like the quote, you just got to chalk them up those days here and there.
Some days, but it's better than not getting a gym membership at all and not going at all.
Exactly. Could be not going at all, but we're going. We're sticking to the grind.
That's right. So what are you, do you have a goal in mind that you're working towards in the gym, or what's the game plan?
So I do think that plays to some of my detriment of having no motivation to ever go to the gym. I do go to the gym like 3 times a week, and I try to run the other days. So I'm a pretty dedicated gym hater. If you ask me, I'm there 3 times a week, and I'm running on the off day. So whatever. That, I like I said, I do think that's some of my detriment, because I just kind of get in there, try to work out. I don't have any real goals. How about you?
Oh, I get that. I don't know. Well, for my thing is, so last year I went on that elk hunt out in Idaho. And, you know, I thought that I was in good shape when I went out there. And, you know, honestly, you go out there and if you're fairly athletic and you kind of, you know, you didn't go dedicate your summer to the gym because you knew you're going to be out there, you know, walking up and down mountains every single day, walking 10 miles a day, and they're all up and down mountains. I mean, you'll do fine. It's not going to be very enjoyable, but you'll do fine. And so, like, my goal this year is just to enjoy that a little bit more and just to be more ready and
not be held back by your, like, conditioning per se.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So if that means I got to lose like 10, 15 pounds and then, you know, just build up my lungs a little bit more, that's what I'll do. So I don't know. Yeah. Just trying to get ready and prepared for that. So
there's nothing wrong with that. I think general health. I mean, like you said, it's not like you're trying to hit a specific weight. Like, you're not trying to squat 490 pounds or something.
Right. Nope.
Just like, even if you go to just better yourself each day, that's what you gotta do.
Exactly. There's a guy that I follow. His name's Mike Dolce. He's pretty intense. He does a lot of free content on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's pretty good stuff. He's a no supplement guy, and he's all about like eating whole foods, stuff that came from the earth. But he's an MMA trainer, so he is like, he's all about, you know, just, he's crazy. He's insane.
How do you spell his name?
Mike, MikeDolce.
All right.
Or the Dolce diet, too, is his thing. So shout out to Mike Dolce.
Shout out to Mike Dolce. Oh, he's not too popular. 28,000 on YouTube.
Well, his Instagram page, he's got over 100,000. So, I mean, but that's not a whole lot compared to some people.
No, but that, I mean, it's way more than me. But I'm just saying, like, he's not one of these, like, crazy main whatever guys. So, no, that's cool. He looks huge.
Yeah, he's pretty. Okay. He used to be like a powerlifter guy, and then he like cut back, and he's all about like a long term approach to health. And he just thinks that, like, he was talking about one of the I can't remember the guy, the fighter's name, but he put together a 10-year
oh my gosh
diet plan for this guy. Like, yeah, he like to finish out his career and then transitioning from his career to retirement and, you know, post MMA stuff. He
yeah,
like a pro MMA guy, and it just was insane that him talking insane about it and the process. Well, so he's all about longevity. Game.
Going back to it. My quote as well, you know, it's there's some right. micro, but you overall the macro is what you gotta get after, which is good. But
that's right.
I don't know. I do.
That's right.
I take a fair amount of protein. The big thing that got me taking protein is that like Tim Ferriss in his book, The 4-Hour Chef, he says if you take 30 grams of protein within 30 minutes of waking mm-hmm. up, like it's a pretty easy way to shred not only, I think just shred fat essentially, because what it does is it keeps you full longer. So for me, I'm not waking up and making a hearty breakfast. So I just supplemented it, which I guess obviously isn't as good. So I did that for a while. And then I realized right. like I started taking it when I was lifting, before I run, after I run. I don't know. Protein definitely helps with muscle repair. So if I can, I don't know. Thought I'd try it out. I don't think it hurt me. But
no, it definitely won't hurt you.
So...
that's for sure.
Case can be made for that.
Absolutely.
What kind of ice cream are you eating?
It was chocolate swirl. So that's one thing. So I pay pretty close attention to diet. Like I eat a lot of things that okay. are just like whole, like a lot of smoothie every single morning that has
okay.
spinach, berries, lemon with okay. the rind. That's a secret tip for anybody listening that makes smoothies.
With what?
Lemon with the rind. Just cut a slice of lemon.
Oh, right yeah? off
and grind it up in the smoothie. Yes.
What the fuck? Why? It add a little texture?
It honestly, like, I don't know. You put a lot of lemon zest in a lot of different, you know, entrees you would make for dinner.
And okay.
I saw my dad do it at home one weekend, and I was like, why?
Dennis Crowe Sr. Shouts to him.
Right, yeah. I said, why are you putting that in your smoothie? Why don't you just take out like the lemon or peel it or something? He's like, what are you talking about? So it's those old secrets that the old guys
adage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a key. But yeah, but ice cream is my one thing that, you know, I go bust my butt in the gym every day and then I, you know, I eat well. But yep. I want some ice cream every once in a while.
Oh, man, I eat ice cream all... well, I don't eat it all the time. I eat it probably... I don't know. I eat it a good amount. Ice cream, donuts, and cookies are my weakness.
I... a little sweet tooth. Yeah, we got a couple sweet tooths on here.
Yeah, I try not to buy it, though. So it's like... I go ham. Right. Like when people buy donuts at work. Dude, I've eaten like 4 donuts in a day.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not holding back.
We've all had those days.
Well, I've had more than one, so. I also realized that on the last podcast, I said I don't drink much beer. I don't drink much beer drink is the preface to that. On the weekends, I can get.
Not during the week.
On the weekends, I'll tend to indulge a little more, you know, handful here and there.
Handfuls here or there, okay.
But
okay.
Beer is another one of my weaknesses. I went to a happy hour with one of my coworkers after, you know, happy hour, $2.50 beer or $4 beer. I don't even know how much it was. $3 beer, I think.
For sure, those happy hour is key to team cohesion at work, that's for sure.
Do you guys, I think we talked about this a little bit in the last one. Do you guys ever go out, though, as a team?
Every once in a while we do, yeah. It depends on who's setting them up. If there's somebody ambitious mm-hmm. enough in the department to do it, then it happens. But if nobody's mm-hmm. there to do it, then it's not going to happen. So me and this other guy that came in last year were nominated in our department to start scheduling them all.
Okay.
So we said that's not a problem because we'll just schedule them really early in the afternoon so everybody can take the afternoon pretty much off and just go. And the manager's a big fan too, so. So works for us.
Yeah, that's easy enough. You know, somebody's got to be director of the fun. Otherwise, nobody's going to be.
Exactly. So.
That's cool.
For sure. Did you stay up to date on the Berkshire Hathaway meeting last weekend that we were at 1 year ago?
In Omaha, Nebraska. No, I did not. Can you give me a brief synopsis?
So what I took from it was he said the usual, you know, usual wisdom that he gives everybody. So you need to invest in value. And if you're going to invest anything, it's, you know, you got to think of something that's going to be around in 5 years because otherwise you shouldn't own it. You know, kind of go down the line. But then one of the big things I think that I read about was that Berkshire, the company then, actually got hit with like some pretty big tax stuff this quarter.
Okay.
And so they had to account for that a little differently. And so it hurt their earnings a little bit, but they are still big and strong. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's always interesting watching an 87-year-old guy and a 93 or 4-year-old guy sit up on stage and have just knockout of the park answers to any type of question you're going to ask him.
That was my biggest takeaway, is like their longevity of just, you know, and just wisdom overall. It's pretty dang incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't seem like two grumpy old dudes. They, you know, but I think that's probably why they're the best and they continue to be on top. They've adopted that change mentality in the long term. They've admitted fault. They've, you know, been like, I think I saw one of the biggest things, and this may have been talked about, is how Warren is heavily invested in Apple. And how he like never would have done that before. So I think just being willing to adapt and maybe change some of those mentalities is they're obviously the best in the business. So.
Right. Cause I actually watched like a thing on CNBC or something. Some guy was like just grilling Warren about how he hasn't invested in any technology stuff because it's not his, you know, wheelhouse. And so he doesn't like it when Warren then kind of bashes some of the tech stuff. And I know Elon Musk was a big thing too, mm-hmm. for some reason.
Yeah. Like,
but Warren was like, I've never said anything bad about Elon Musk. We just disagree on a few things here and there, but I don't know. That's a whole nother story. That guy.
Elon Musk, yeah, he's a baller. I just saw the other day that the Boring Company, his company, has pending some regulatory whatever in LA. They're going to be giving free rides to the public for like a month. So, I mean, that can't be bad.
No, not at all. I did see, though, that... I think they're losing $8,000 for every Model 3 car that they like produce.
Really? Why is that?
Just that the rates are producing them. It isn't fast enough to make any money yet.
I see. I know they've had a couple of recalls, but I don't know if it's on the Model 3.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a bunch. Is there quite a few Teslas out in Boise?
Yes and no. Like, I'll see the occasional Model X, but I don't think so because everything's so spread out here. So it's like, I mean, you're either going to Boise or Nampa or like, I don't know, and or like Meridian, but like Nampa is like one of the closer towns and that's 30 minutes away. So it's like, you know, you can't just drive down to Salt Lake probably.
No, yeah, right.
So I think it's more of that aspect of things.
There, I mean, I for sure like what he's doing because it's, if you think about it, he's like the only person mass producing these electric vehicles and he's the only one mass installing all of those charging stations. And so it's like one person is now going to be the whole oil industry, not the whole oil industry, but like 40 or 50% of what the oil industry is, which is a lot of money.
Yep. I totally agree. He's kind of like an Apple. He's creating a an atmosphere, you know. He's creating that premium brand, and like if you read on it, he created the their initial Roadster to fund the Model S, then the Model S to fund the Model X, and then the Model X to an S to fund the Model 3. And so on and so forth. So, I mean, now they have another Roadster coming out. So, I think eventually, they'll, it's just like everything. Eventually, it'll get cheaper, you know. Think of TVs 10, 15 years ago, flat screens, like a couple thousand for a, you know, LCD or whatever, or a plasma TV. Now, you can pick them up pretty cheap.
For sure, yeah.
And even more relatable, the first cars, only super wealthy had them, and yeah, so
for sure.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, just kind of reading something here too, going back to the meeting. So Ted and Todd are the two so you have Ted and Todd, the two investor slash trader guys that are in charge of like, I think they're each in charge of like $15 billion over there.
Okay.
They're each in charge of 15 billion out of the 100 billion in cash. So there's 70 million that's left over that I think Warren for sure like has control over. And then I'm not sure how big of a role. I didn't know this, but I don't know how big of a role that Charlie plays still, because I just found out that he lives in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Warren lives in Omaha there, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, Warren's never leaving.
No, not at all. But I guess one of those two trader guys, the Todd Combs guy, is supposedly going to be the successor to supposedly to Warren Buffett. Supposedly it'll be one of these guys, Ted or Todd. So
Ted or Todd, Todd or Ted.
Right. Yeah. But I guess they generate returns better than the S&P 500. So,
well,
can't be a bad thing.
Can't be. It, yeah, I really don't think it can. I mean, I don't know. Investing's crazy. It, I don't know.
You gotta, I've been really, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been really interested in, learning more about the real estate stuff.
Okay.
Because I listened to a, Dave Ramsey podcast the other day. And it was a millionaire theme hour. I really only like listening to those because all the other ones are just the same, more of the same. They have these people that call it and they just have crazy amounts of credit card debt and they're not very smart people. And they're just asking a dumb question, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't stand it. But anyways, so this guy calls in and he's like, yeah, I've got a $20 million net worth and 95% of it is in real estate.
Yeah.
Like he only had, I think he said it may have been even more than 95% because he said he only had like 100,000 in cash in the bank or in retirement savings.
Okay.
And then the other stuff was in real estate. And so he said he's like in my early 20s, I bought a single family home And then once I, you know, had enough down on it, or had enough equity in it, I took that and then bought another single family home and did it again and kept building up all the way up until now. He only invests in like high rise apartment buildings.
Okay.
And so he had a 20 some million dollar net worth. And then on top of that, he had like 14 or 15 million in debt. So he had control of like 35 million in assets.
Okay.
And he said he was bringing in income of like just south of $1 million a year.
Wow.
I was like, huh.
That's what did Ramsey say?
Well, that's what I was like. So I was like, wow, this guy's leveraged up to his eyeballs.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, no, he's not. Because if he's got a bad day and he has to get rid of everything, he's still got 5 or 6 million left over.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, or no, he has 20 million left over because that was net worth is assets minus liabilities equal net worth. So.
Oh, yeah. The old accounting formula.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But no, he was supportive of it because, you know, the guy was smart about how he did things. And obviously you can't argue with it. You know, the dude's successful. So. But.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would be a little concerned with that.
But I feel like if you're gonna do that, the real estate thing, I think you have to be all in like that.
Really?
Because otherwise, I feel like if you only have one or two properties here and there, and then like you're not really sure if I should be investing the money in, you know, 401ks or if I should be putting money towards more units. You know,
yeah.
I feel like you're not really knowing what you should be doing, and you're going back and forth. And instead, I think I don't know. I think people. I don't want to tell people what to do. But,
no, you're good.
You know, I just think you should commit one way or the other, or commit to a plan. And just say, you know, I'm buying two single family homes, renting them out, and they're going to be paid in cash. Because I don't understand the point of having two single family homes, have mortgages out on them, and you're not like paying them off, just to sit there and maintain them. You know, that's what I don't get. But I could see paying a mortgage on like a 10 unit apartment building, or you know, even more than that units, because the cash flow just makes a little more sense then.
Yeah, I mean, for me, investing just comes down to what you want to do as long as you're being smart about it. But I can see if you're going to go into real estate, yeah, it takes a little more. You need to have some of that, like, all in or nothing, just because it's going to take being all in for a while to generate actual revenue. But, yeah. That's really interesting. I haven't listened to much Dave Ramsey. My boss really likes him, but
does he? So is your boss a live and breathe by Dave Ramsey guy, or?
Well, she's a woman.
Oh, sorry.
So
is she a live and breathe by Dave Ramsey person?
Yeah, she's a big fan. She's a fan of no debt, and understandably so. I think investing in finance is like kind of what you're comfortable with. Yeah, I do think. There are maybe more profitable options than not having no debt, such as like paying down the extra on what you would put down on a 30-year. So say my biggest example is if you took out a 30-year mortgage versus a 15, the 15's payment each month is going to be a lot higher. But if you just put that extra amount that you would be paying on the 15 towards the 30, if you invested that into just an index fund, you'd make so much more money.
Right. Which
even at a modest like 7% return.
Right. And that's where I think, so I was actually just watching a video before we got on here about, I can't remember what he classified as the different types of debt, but I think like a mortgage for sure is like a wealth building tool, and you just have to know how to use it. Right. Just like a hammer. Hammer is a tool. You just got to know how to use it right. It's not going to work if you know, try hammering something in with a nail puller side. You know?
Yep. Totally. That's about my only thing with investing is like, I mean, if you're not comfortable with debt, don't have debt, whatever. Like, you got to live in the present for the most part and hopefully plan for the future best you can. But if you can't live for now, you can't live the future.
Right.
So first and foremost, money wise, you got to live in the present, you know, got to make smart financial decisions today and just hopefully they'll pay you down in the future. But, yeah, are you a big Dave Ramsey guy? I know you're trying to pay down your student debts. And
yeah, we're yeah. So I think like, I totally agree. Like I think the debts that don't really help you, you know,
like, so student loans, right?
Yeah. So your student loan, I understand like it's an investment in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you need you went to college, that helped you get your job, and that's how you're going to fund your X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, yeah, I understand that, but I didn't need to go to college to make, you know, X dollars. And instead, you could be using, you know, those funds to put towards, let's say, a mortgage. And then that asset that you bought with the mortgage, you can generate income from.
Yep.
On top of working, you know.
Yeah.
So like I think things like that, like if it's not if you're buying something that cannot generate income with debt, you probably shouldn't be using debt for it.
Yeah. I agree.
And I'd go as far as saying that even sometimes buying a home, you know, mm-hmm. isn't always a great idea, you know, if it's, it just has to make the right sense. I've actually researched it a little bit, buying versus renting, especially right now in this market where you have like super inflated prices mm-hmm. on both ends of the spectrum. Like rent is really high and so are home prices.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I think a lot of people fail to see all the other transactional costs that happen.
Such as
all the costs that are associated with
by owning a home.
Oh yeah, so you have owning the home, the maintenance of the home, any repair that you're gonna have to mm-hmm. do to the home. But then on top of that, you have property taxes. Not everything's about that. And these are all mm-hmm. things that you don't get back out of the house. It's just a sunk mm-hmm. cost every year. And then you also have, like when you physically buy and sell the home, you have to pay the fees to the realtors. You have like the loan fees that are associated with the mortgage. So if you were to buy and sell a home for the same price that you bought it for, and then you sold it for the same price, you're going to lose a decent chunk of change. You know, you could lose 10% on the house.
Right off the bat,
yeah. And plus all those other costs that we talked about.
Yeah, it is weird. So you do feel the market's inflated, though?
Oh. We're not making any more land anytime soon. I get that.
Yeah. Well, I just am curious what's really driving it. Is it just like the unemployment? Like what's going on here? Or the lack of unemployment?
Yeah, I just think that there's like there's a housing shortage in areas where there's where the unemployment rate, you know, is low and people need to and want to live other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because, like, I see and kind of hear about it a lot out here. Like, houses are going for quite a bit over asking price. Like, you know, it just is, like, it's just kind of crazy. I mean, have you thought about buying a house? I guess, I mean,
mm-hmm.
the long-term plan may not be Rochester, but I'm sure it's crossed your mind.
No, yeah, we've thought about it just because we want to get something where it's what we want. mm-hmm. and we're going to have all the amenities that we want, like a nice kitchen in the backyard. Those are like two big ones. We don't need like six bedrooms or anything, but
no.
But then you start looking at like what that might cost, and versus if you were just to rent a house. So we actually just signed a lease on a house.
Oh yeah.
That well, we didn't sign it. It was like in the end of February or end of February we signed a lease on a house, and then we're moving in here at the end of the month.
Okay.
But if you were to buy the same exact home, mm-hmm. I think the mortgage on it would have been, you know, it would have been probably $100. But then the house, I mean, we're talking about like a 900 square foot house, not a big house at all.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that house in a lot of towns in Minnesota and Wisconsin sell for less than $100,000. That house here in Rochester sells for $150,000.
Okay.
And so,
Rochester is a more desirable place to live, right?
Right. I mean, there's just people coming and going. Yeah, there's people coming and going all the time. They can't build the apartment buildings fast enough for people. And then that's the other thing. So you have this apartment building going up across the street, and you've got rental properties all up and down the street here mm-hmm. now. Well, they know that that apartment building is going to lease all their other yep. units, you know,
yeah, whatever.
For if it's a two-bedroom place. It's got a low minimum price of $1,300. Mm-hmm. So everybody else who has got, you know, a comparable thing is going to list it for $1,300. Mm-hmm. And then you're just kind of like, well, now what?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what to do either kind of deal.
Right. Well, and so like, just to finish out my thought there. So if you're able to find a place rent wise that is going to be sub anything around here. Like I think our place we're paying $950 a month, which is I think much less than what we would be paying. Plus in all the, like all those costs that we're talking about, if you were to buy the house and then all the maintenance fees, plus we're not sure if we're going to be here long-term. So just didn't make sense yet. And yeah, I don't know. Like I've read into it, and I think on any real estate deal, you want to try to get at least 20% below what the home's actually worth really? When you pay for it, if you want to try to make money on it.
And that's just not feasible right now.
No. Well, it's just got to be the right opportunity, the right time. And you got to have, yeah, and you got to have like, you got to have the cash now. You got to have funding mm-hmm. now. So...
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's just like kind of like what I'm saying. It's just like, I don't know. I'm not really in a rush to buy a house. So it's like,
no.
Why pay 10, 20%? I don't want to be upside down on a house in 2 years because I overpaid for it.
Plus all the costs that you think about. So let's say Nick, you went and bought yourself a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom place that had a pretty good size living room and a nice size basement. Mm-hmm. And you got yourself a 2-car garage. Well, single guy,
mm-hmm.
maybe get a roommate for one of the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to fill the living room. You got to fill the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but I'm just saying, you know,
eventually you probably will.
Right. Yeah. You know, you're in a, buy, you know, you go to the store, you see things, it's like, oh yeah, that'd look good in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll pick that up. Whereas like, if you don't have the space for it, you're not going to buy anything to fill the space.
Yep.
So I don't know. That's why I was kind of happy that, you know, we found a smaller place too. Cause it's like, well, I'm not going to be inclined to buy anything. Cause you know, you're going to think about it. Cause if you don't have anywhere to put it, you're not going to buy it. So
mm-hmm. How many square feet is your place right now?
I would say it's probably 800 square feet. I don't know.
One or two bedrooms. It's 2 bedrooms, isn't it?
2-bedroom, 1 bath. Yeah.
That's not bad. And then your new place is a little smaller?
No, it's roughly the same size. Maybe a little bigger. Not over 1,000 square feet though.
That's nothing too bad, though. Not too bad at all.
Are you staying in the same place
next year? For now, we signed like a 8 or 9 month lease. I don't really know. It's up in like October. So
okay,
I got a little bit of time to think about what I want to do. So
there you go.
Yeah, it'll be good.
For sure. It's one of those things, just moving sucks. You got to think about that when you want to sign a new lease.
Moving blows.
You got to move all your crap then.
Right. That's the exact thing. Oh, it's kind of a hiccup. And where I live is pretty dang cheap, so yeah. Like I pay $415 a month. So it's $830 total. So kind of like you're saying, it's like pretty cheap to just live here and not have literally any. Like I think I pay like $550 total with internet, water, trash, sewer, and then like power and heat. So can't hardly find a better deal.
Yep. Which I know. I know you can probably attest this. I know plenty of single people at work that are paying.
Oh yeah, easy.
More than double that.
Easy. It's you know, it's something.
Mm-hmm. No, I've actually thought about it, though. I kind of think, you know, if we were to, just because of the price of homes is so high right now, but I have heard too, the cost to build homes is also high.
Really?
Because of building shortages, because of you have all these large contractors building all these things. So building supply costs just more now.
Uh-huh.
So cost of building homes is still super expensive.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I don't know if I would ever want to build a house. That sounds like a nightmare. Sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Well, depends on the situation. Depends on the situation.
I'm like an instant gratification guy. I like would want to be like, bam, I want this sucker.
You just got to get one of those, like a modular home. It just comes in on semis and they just build it right in front of your eyes. And it's done in a week.
That'd be pretty neat, honestly.
They're usually pretty super efficient too.
They're pretty efficient. I think they're a lot cheaper too. I don't know. We'll see. And living in a tiny home, I don't think.
You just got to buy like two or three of those shipping containers.
Right. Yeah.
Slap some solar panels on.
Like I said, I got till October. I'll definitely keep renting for maybe at least another year. And then when I'm filthy rich,
yeah,
you know, snake up a penthouse.
That's right.
A couple mil, you know, no shy of two
there
mil.
There you go.
Yeah, 2-3 mil. Yeah.
Two or three of them things?
No. I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
just Airbnb that thing out. I'm sure people would do it.
Yeah, right. They wouldn't be able to afford it.
This is $5,000 a night. I hope it's all right.
Yeah, I hope that's okay, because that won't even cover my mortgage.
There's $1,000 cleaning charge per person that comes in.
God, wouldn't that be something? No, but we'll see. I'm interested to see if the trend keeps up and how long it'll keep up. And if it doesn't, I kind of hope it doesn't, because I wouldn't mind scooping up a house or two on the low.
Right. I'm sure there'll be... there'll be the opportunities. Just got to be able to recognize it.
Yeah. But anyhow, on the topic of investing, did you read that little Bitcoin article? Our favorite little friend, Bitcoin.
Yeah, it was interesting.
To give a TLDR on it for our three listeners, essentially, there was a startup that is like a bank for your Bitcoin pins. So essentially, like, has access to all your Bitcoin, just like a bank, it would have access to all your money. But how Bitcoin works is like you have a
it's like a 60 digit PIN or code, whatever, mm-hmm. identification number. And the startup houses them in like seven different places in the world. And they house roughly $10 billion of Bitcoin, which is about 7%, if I'm reading this and understanding this correctly. Yes. More deposits than 98% right. of roughly the 55,670 banks. So, yeah, that's a little scary, if you ask me. What do you think of the article?
I don't know. I thought it was interesting. It's good reassurance that I'm not the only idiot out there.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of background stuff that me and you can't really understand. Oh, yeah. And definitely. I think some of these like Silicon Valley like super smart tech people understand.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a reason why they're interested in it.
Mm-hmm. I think what it comes down to is some of it is like just like the institutional investors, you know, they just have more, you know, they have more money, they have more connections. So kind of one of those things in my mind.
Yeah, and I actually heard a good way to put, classified Bitcoin is it's a good hedge against the current financial structure.
Sure, why not?
So like this guy said that he thinks you should have 1-5% of your total portfolio in Bitcoin. Why not? If you know X amount, or you have your normal institutionalized stuff goes down, the other stuff should go up if you have another catastrophic event like 2008, 2007 stuff happen. So I don't know. I thought that was a good way of putting it. I think that there for sure will be some sort of – I think they're going to take the technology that Bitcoin uses and apply it to fiat currencies. So that'd be like your US dollar, okay. Your euro, franc –
okay. Yeah. Your Swiss franc.
So I don't know. I think the technology is here to stay, you know, whether there's going to be a global digital currency that isn't centralized. I don't know. We'll see. I think
it would be hard to completely disrupt global currency. If you ask me,
right. I think you're getting like too far ahead. Like, I think the last podcast or the one before that, we talked about how people invent before innovate.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge disconnect, and you'll have things blow up because people aren't ready to adopt, you know, technology isn't ready for this other new mm-hmm. technology
mm-hmm.
and you can create more problems and solve more problems with it. And I think this might be one of those things that it's a good idea. It'll be around for a while yet, and it might still always be around, but it's just, it might take a very long time. Yeah. Or there might have to be like some like very large advances in technology in order for it to become to take over fiat currency.
I think so too. I think something's going to have to go horribly wrong in general, like in the overall currency, like that would get the general public on board, you know? Like,
I think it would just take something.
I don't know.
How like, MasterCard and Visa have done it, you know, with credit cards. It's essentially, you know, just understanding that, okay, you just take this card now and just swipe it here, there, and everywhere, and you can go buy stuff. Oh, okay.
You just cut out. What were you saying?
I don't know. Oh, I think that, you know, to take MasterCard and Visa, for example, you know, and the card credit card technology. You take that and apply it towards, I mean, I think, you know, Joe Schmo and, you know, Bonnie McDaniel down in Oklahoma don't care if they have $100, you know, 100 stones or 100 shoes, as long as they only have to pay, as long as they know that they swipe their card and they're able to get milk with 2.3 stones or, you know, 4.2 pairs of shoes.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, I think it's just going to have to come, you know, it'll be very large at that point when you have, you know, all these people, you know, the people that don't understand the technology behind it right now, which you, I mean, it's very comparable to the internet, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Right away when the internet came on in the early to late 90s, people thought it was just so stupid.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. I think it's got to be longevity, and it's got to, like, honestly, like, it's got to take over. And I personally kind of see, you know, not having a centralized, but does, like, the general public fully believe that? I think it would be really hard to convince them that that's, you know, that there is this huge problem, or like that investing in crypto, or not even investing, but using, because it'll be using crypto at that point. It won't be investing. Will like significantly improve their life. I don't know. That's just me though.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking at a visualization chart of just like dollars in general.
Okay.
And I just love how all these big, you know, these big talking figures on all the major networks talk about how cryptocurrency is like the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
But if you look at the market cap of cryptocurrency, it's not that much.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you compared it to the derivatives that are out on the market that are being bought and sold.
Oh yeah.
Here, let me quick read this.
I definitely think derivatives are like, they're not sketchy. I mean, I guess, but like, shit.
The high end estimate for the value of all derivatives contracts is as high of $1.2 quadrillion.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, you can lose more than you freaking...
than you put in.
Yeah, like a lot more than you put in. Like tons more.
Mm-hmm.
So... I agree. I think derivatives maybe should have further scrutinized than crypto, but I don't know.
We're not in control, unfortunately. But
we're not in control, and just like we started the podcast off, long term, we'll find out.
That's right.
We'll see. We'll see who's, you know, I'm not a hater. I'm kind of a hater, but I'm not saying like death to crypto. I'm curious on where it'll go out. I don't know if I'll ever invest, but
like Gary V says, you gotta enjoy the process, right? So we're enjoying the process of watching all this technology come about that faster than that. Like, who would have ever thought in, you know, 2002 that
we'd be walking around, you know, with a freaking computer in our pocket?
Well, just like, I think, what is it? The amount of smartphones out there that everybody has, and like you're not normal if you don't have a smartphone, you know?
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's changed very fast. And I think a lot of things in technology can change very, very fast. And it isn't very fast. I mean, like a 5-year span, you can see things drastically change.
I agree. And that's where I'm curious, like with the housing market and Bitcoin and everything, like,
right.
can't see into the future, and I don't know if I'd want to be able to. So we'll see.
That's for sure.
But you have any plans for this weekend? We'll end this on a little lighter note.
Big old archery tournament tomorrow. I haven't been shooting as much, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna go spend some time with some people and shoot my bow. So
hey, nothing wrong with that.
How about you? That's right. Big day at the office tomorrow.
I will be working tomorrow on Saturday, which I'm not bummed about, really. I mean, it's whatever. I haven't had to do it yet, and hopefully helping the company out a little bit. And I don't know, trust the process, I guess.
That's right. I don't know. I've noticed, like, I don't know, when I have to work weekends, it doesn't catch up to you until you're working for like the X day straight. And it's kind of like, wow, I actually kind of need a break now.
Have you had to work many weekends?
Yeah. So every quarter closing month. So back in April, closing out March, the March books, that the weekend, the first weekend of the month, usually you've got to, I got to work those to get the numbers reported to the street in time. But
yeah, man, I know all about closing the books. That's literally what we do. So, it's fun. It'll be good. I'm not too worried. Like you said, it probably won't hit me until I've worked 12 days straight or something like that. And I'm like,
Right.
Yeah.
But you guys get Sunday off,
right? I might have to work Sunday. We don't know yet.
Might have to. Okay. Well, so, you've got a good teams, good support system around you. You'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. I'm not. You know, I don't think I'd be able to do it if I didn't have such good coworkers. I definitely, three or four of them already have texted me like, hey, when are you going in tomorrow? So yeah,
it'll be a party in there.
Trying to do our part. So, but yeah, archery tournament for you, winning any money or...
Yeah, I think there is a payout. There's 50% payout. So, but it's in Watonga.
Couple mil or what?
2-3 mil or something like that. It's in Watoma, Wisconsin. So,
all right,
I'll be on the road for 3 hours one way and 3 hours back one way tomorrow. But it'll be fine.
Oh, doggy.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be just fine.
I don't mind doing it. I haven't seen this other guy in a little while, so.
Yeah. That's cool. That'll be fun. Well, on that note, I'm going to stop the recording. Thanks for hopping on, Dennis.